The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Now, in the Oireachtas today, we've heard a very interesting presentation about COVID, particularly the issue of long COVID, and a set of figures that, if they're borne out over a longer period of time, are extremely alarming, where one third of people who got COVID or have now have long COVID, and up to 1 in 20 of all COVID patients are still unable to work a year later. My next guest thinks we need a new plan to tackle this and find out more and do some research and get better treatments in place. And he's Dr. Jack Lambert, who is a Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at the UCD School of Medicine. We also will be joined by Una Carr, who has herself suffered very grievously with long COVID. Dr. Lambert, first of all, thank you for coming on The Hard Shoulder. Appreciate you joining us.
No trouble. Happy to be there.
I'm looking at these figures now. I've been reading a lot about this in recent weeks because it is very alarming. I thought, but I may be completely wrong, but I thought Omicron had lowered the amount of long COVID in evidence. But I suppose the sheer number of infections that are happening means it's just as bad a problem as it was a year or two ago.
Yeah, well, that's the issue. We're not keeping track of how many cases of long COVID there are. We don't know. But at least the data that we have from the Mater Clinic, you know, where I worked, we did, you know, surveys on, you know, back in 2020 on the first 155 patients. And a third of them that were in the long COVID clinic, to be in the long COVID clinic, you have to be sick for at least 3 months post-COVID. They were still sick a year. A third of them still had significant symptoms. And, you know, a smaller percentage of them, I mean, they were not sick enough to be out of work, but a smaller percentage of them, 1% to 5%, were still not back at work. And if you start multiplying that by 1% to 5% of people that get COVID will get long COVID, and you look at Omicron's affected probably most of the Irish population, you know, you do the math, 5 million people, you know, even 1% of 5 million people with, you know, who are unwell still a year after getting sometimes a minor COVID infection, that's concerning.
Yes, and I mean, there doesn't seem to be any great consensus on what's causing it. Some people have put their cap on the idea that it's the immune system kind of gone into overdrive and won't halt and is causing all sorts of problems. I think you tend towards the explanation that this is a neurological issue. Would that be correct?
Well, it's not one thing, but I think the major thing is that if you look back, we used to think the heart and lungs were going to be damaged. Like that, the first wave, everybody ended up in the hospital with cardiomyopathies and, you know, lung whiteouts, damage there. And that was part infectious, part immunological. But recently, the most recent strains aren't affecting the heart and the lungs. And the thing that's not healing is the brain. So I think we really need to focus on the brain, and the inflammation of the brain is triggering most of the symptoms of long COVID. And of course, yes, there is the immunology, the immune system has been damaged. So that's part of the problem. And then people also think there's something called mitochondrial kind of collapse, you know, the powerhouse of the cells, you know, that people get this profound weakness. So it's probably multifactorial, but the organ that's been targeted in long COVID is not the heart and the lungs as we thought 2 years ago, it's the brain.
And a really amazing figure in some of the data you've collected is the preponderance of women who are getting long COVID. It's way higher than male patients. Any clues on that side of things?
Well, the thing is that, like, in the first wave, it was equally men and women because most of them were healthcare workers. But the preponderance of, I would say, 60% are women. It's not like 100% women. It's more women than men are showing up with long COVID. And there may be lots of factors in that. There may be immune factors, and women's immune system may be different. There's also kind of the theory that, you know, some people are primed. They have a pre-existing immune disorder that would make them more likely to get long COVID. We're still learning about this, but the statistics are it's 60-40, 60% men, you know, 60% women, 60% women, 40% men. So it does have some kind of a, you know, kind of sexual preponderance. But we're still learning about this.
Yeah, I mean, you're the doctor here, so excuse some of my questions come with tinge with a bit of ignorance. But I thought there was a blood-brain barrier there. How is this virus getting up into the brain in the first place? Because that's not an easy thing to do in the human body.
But it isn't, you know, it isn't. I mean, most viruses, you've heard of people getting viral meningitis, you know, how do viruses give you meningitis? You know, that viruses get into your body, go into your bloodstream, and where does your bloodstream go? Your bloodstream goes everywhere. And if your meninges are inflamed, you know, then the virus goes in there. A third of cases of active acute COVID is affecting the brain. And when you do lumbar punctures in some of the patients, you know, on the hospital, you can actually isolate COVID from the spinal fluids, you know. So it's there. It is there. It's not just in the lungs and the heart.
Yes.
It's circulating in the bloodstream, and it goes to the brain. It goes to the gut. And that's the scary thing about this virus. It goes everywhere, and then even after you're over, there seems to be some residual damage to some of the organs that's affected.
Let me bring in our second guest, Jack. You stay with us for the moment, because I want to also get a kind of a more up-to-date feeling from you and a view on where we are with COVID generally. But Una Carr, welcome to The Hard Shoulder. I know you've been really struggling with this condition. Just tell me your story from when you picked up COVID initially. I think it was back in the first few months of the disease.
It was. Thank you. Thank you, Emmett. And thank Dr. Lambert also for the Euroctus submission. I've watched your presentation today with great interest. Unfortunately, I contracted COVID in March 2020. And while I wasn't hospitalised, I did have pretty severe symptoms, but I managed them more or less at home. And I was put on various antibiotics and different inhalers and so on. And I managed, when I was sleeping all the time, I wasn't wholly better when I went back to work, which ended up being a big problem. So I returned to work in June of that year, and unfortunately I had to come out in October because I was just suffering from chest pain and palpitations, and I couldn't regulate my temperature properly. I just didn't understand what was going on. Now, I have been looking at my care because I did see a respiratory consultant. I am also attending a long COVID clinic. But I guess it's a constellation of symptoms. It's not just one thing, and I am not getting better. Like, I'm on probably, I think it's 6 different meds, some of them twice a day. I loved my job. I was good at my job, but I haven't been able to return to work since October 21. And basically, like, I'm a mum of 2. I've been searching for answers and following the research since the beginning. And, you know, online, etc. I actually have had quite a lot of interaction with the long COVID group in Ireland and the long COVID support group, and also in one of them in the UK. But it's just not going away.
And Una, have you made any progress, do you think, in your own sense? Like, or is it very small and incremental, or is it just literally your symptoms are the same as they were back in 2020?
Well, it's interesting because it kind of follows some of the points Dr. Lambert made in his presentation today. But I did have heart and lung impairment. So I had myocarditis and pericarditis, which is swelling and fluid around the heart, which was discovered on an MRI months later. And I also had impairments in my breathing muscles. So there was physical damage there, as that was shown, which was, you know, pretty distressing, but it was also kind of validating because it's an invisible illness. And I think that's what a lot of us struggle from. I haven't personally not been believed by anyone in the medical profession, but unfortunately, you know, employers, some medics, they're prescribing, or they're just suggesting, you know, CBT and, you know, maybe some antidepressant tablets. And I think, and I would say, Emmett, as well, the media, you know, I think that need to probably work a little harder. Sorry, I'm not trying to insult you or, you know.
I won't take it personally.
It's a general observation that I think there's a big focus on fatigue and on, you know, this inability to function again because of the fatigue. And there was some reporting a few months ago on alcohol problem in long COVID, and it's like the media jumped on that, and it's hurting the credibility. When in fact, it's if we could just sort of look at it holistically, it's the whole body that's affected. I can't get through a day without a 2-hour nap, and I used to, you know, run and fly around, and I had a full time job, and that has not changed.
You were particularly unlucky because obviously nobody was vaccinated either then. Now, and I'm going to ask Dr. Lambert about that aspect, because obviously a large number of our listeners are or have been given boosters. Dr. Lambert, does it make a difference? Like, is long COVID, does it get any slightly better, or are the symptoms lower or anything like that if people have been vaccinated?
You know, originally when I looked at that data, it looked like maybe, you know, you were protected, there'd be a small amount of protection from being vaccinated, but that doesn't seem to be holding out. It seems that, you know, well, first off, I mean, I get 3 doses of vaccine and I still get COVID. So vaccines don't prevent you from catching COVID. That's number one. Do vaccines prevent you from developing long COVID? There's not good evidence that it may have a minor benefit, but not significant. So the best way to not catch COVID is to wear a mask, you know, or avoid being close to people. That's still the message, the take-home message. Vaccines prevent severe disease in the acute phase. That's their benefit.
Yeah, I mean, one of the alarming things of your research is that there had been a sense, again, it may just be an old wives' tale stuff, but there had been a sense that, you know, you get COVID once and then you get it a second time and it's milder. But your research and others, it's not just you, other research seems to show that the ante gets upped almost, as you contract, you could be more exposed to long COVID as you're kind of rolling the dice even further. Would you agree with that general summary?
Yeah, it's unpredictable. You know, I mean, I know people have got 3 episodes of COVID in 4 months, and the first one wasn't so bad. The second one was quite bad. And then the third one wasn't so bad. So we don't understand, you know, but it's doing something. The virus is doing something to the immune system. It is doing something to the brain. And there's probably different strains of COVID we're not aware of. So we're still learning about this, but it's a real entity. And people are not making it up. When you do scans on, you know, research scans on patients with long COVID, you know, PET scans specifically, there's evidence of inflammation there. There's evidence of inflammation to the nerves coming out of the brain, including the vagus nerve, which is a nerve that kind of controls your blood pressure, your pulse, your thermoregulation, you know, dysautonomia, which is, you know, what was being described just a few minutes before. So I think it's a real entity. There's inflammation in the brain, inflammation in the nerves, and it's making people pretty miserable. And we don't have answers to what to do to get people better.
Well, while I have you on the line, we obviously want to talk a little bit about the future trajectory of this disease. We're looking at about 880 or so people in hospital. Obviously, some of them had pre-existing conditions, but not all of them by any manner of means. We're looking at about just north of 30 people in ICU, the last set of figures I saw. So, I mean, what kind of people are you treating for COVID in a live sense at the moment? I mean, who and what are they? What age are they? What's their underlying health condition? We don't get this information. I certainly, as an outsider observer, I find the information flow diabolical, to be honest, about who is getting COVID. And the only answer you ever get is, oh, well, it's a variety, but there must be patterns in there. So you're seeing people in front of you in beds being treated. So can you just give us some sense of the colour around the kind of patients that are currently in our hospitals?
Well, the deal is that some of the patients are, you know, catching COVID in the hospital, or some of the people are coming into the hospital for surgery, and then they're being swabbed and found to be COVID positive after they're admitted to the hospital. So there's a lot of incidental COVID. So there's incidental COVID in the hospital, and there's patients who are sick with COVID in the hospital. And I think, as a rule, you know, the risk factors for COVID are people who are immunocompromised once again. You know, we're seeing very few, you know, younger people, you know, unvaccinated people ending up in the hospital. But we're, you know, I used to be filling out death certificates on a weekly basis. You know, I filled out 1 this year total in the whole year. So that's good news, you know. And that person was an elderly person who was immunocompromised, who got very sick in the hospital with, and their COVID, you know, the lungs filled up with fluid, just like the first wave. But that is 90% less than it was in the first wave. So I think it's good news that we're not in crisis in the hospitals, but it's still impacting on the hospitals because, sure, you know, we can't, you know, staff are getting sick. They have to be out for 10 days. You know, we're limited in terms of what we can
and
do.
As an infectious disease, as Dr. Lambert, you guys have been handling this for 2.5 years. You learn, you look at new techniques, you look at how to patient manage. I mean, in the 2.5 years, has the treatment of people in the hospital with this disease, has it vastly improved? Has it slightly improved? Like, in other words, what you as a doctor and as a medical team can do when somebody arrives in, I know there are different treatments, there's remdesivir and all sorts of things, but have you actually noticed the sort of stuff you've learned as an actual clinician, has that improved appreciably in the 2.5 years? Are we still kind of in a ground zero sort of phase?
Well, you know, the trouble is when people get viruses, there's no good treatments for many viruses. That's the story, you know, and you know, steroids and remdesivir, those things, they just kind of decrease the inflammation, maybe shorten the duration of virus spreading. But basically, it's just supporting patients through the illness, whatever illness they're going to get. So we are better at it than before. But But like I said, it's still a challenge. This is a new virus, and it's different than other viruses we've managed in the past. And we don't have magic cures for people that end up in the hospital, just clinical support in the hospital or the ICU, oxygen therapy and the like.
OK, well, listen, I wish both of you well. It's a tough burden to have placed on you as a clinician. You're as you said, you've got a lot of people in front of you in those wards. And also Una, who's making her own personal battle to try and offset what sound like very difficult symptoms that don't seem to be particularly improving. But I know that you'll stick with it and avail of good advice and see if you can at least ameliorate it a little bit further. Because I know it's having big quality of life impact on you. That's Una Carr, who has long COVID. And before that, you heard Dr. Jack Lambert. Now this.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.